This is Shayna.
And Chris.
And we are Bad Queers. If you came out of the closet and got put in a box of stereotypes you don't belong to, then welcome to the Bad Queers Club.
All right. This week in Queer Urban Dictionary, I have GSRM, which is an acronym for gender, sexual, and romantic minority. My sentence is, this event is a dedicated space for GSRM folks.
Mm-hmm. I want to look more into romantic minority.
Yeah.
Next week. We'll add to it. All right. My Queer Urban Dictionary word of the week is crop top. Crop top is a short, masculine presenting queer person. I got this from at Jean Seizure on Instagram, who's also a musician. So go check out their music. But they were personally attacked by this phrase. So a person said to them, you actually look shorter in real life, like a crop top. Mm. Too good. Did I cackle? I did. And at Jean Seizure, I did laugh hard. So thank you for that moment. For those things. All right.
The crop top is an unsung article of clothing. You know, it's spanned decades, you know? Mm-hmm. I always think of the 80s when they would have the football jerseys that were like bras, yes, basically.
Yes.
And they were this like super masculine, though.
When the men would wear the stuff and then it transitioned, mm-hmm, over. And honestly, that is a gender neutral article of clothing. So
it really is. It is. It's coming back now. All that 80s and 90s. I remember also the Bully and Class Act also had crop top. And it was just confusing to me. I was like, he's masculine, but like, I was like, he's the biggest bully, but he's like, his stomach can hang out like that. Like, I was just like, okay, I guess. I mean, what a time. 80s and 90s.
Yeah. I was like, I'm pretty sure 70s.
And now, too. I guess now. 70s, yeah. I guess too. Yeah.
I think so. I guess,
yeah. 70s.
I'm pretty sure.
It probably was 70s, I would imagine.
I think it was more
like
70s.
I feel like they weren't doing that in the 60s.
Like, I was like, it was with the Hoochie Daddy shorts and the,
yeah,
the crop tops.
Yeah. And probably 70s. Yeah. For sure, 80s and 90s, but probably 70s. Yeah. Someone listening to this knows for sure. So, you know, let us know.
Somebody listening is like, wow, millennials. We said, yes, know. That is us.
Well, you know, they blame us for everything. So every week there's something new. Every week there's something new. They're going to blame us for the Civil War next week. It's like, what? Millennials started the Civil War.
We were there, apparently. Allegedly.
I guess. Sure.
Those are the things.
Yes.
All right. Mm-hmm. Well, this week we have company. And no, there's no way that I could shorten this amazing bio, mm-hmm, for this person. So be prepared to read like the bio of the year, honestly, and stick with me as we do this introduction.
You got this.
I want to welcome Preston Mitchum, him, who is a Black queer attorney, advocate, and activist hailing from Dayton, Ohio, and living in Washington, D.C. He is the chief executive officer of PDM Consulting, LLC, a multi-purpose consulting firm focused on the power of Black people, LGBTQ+ people, and young people. In his more than a decade of legal and policy expertise, Preston has served in nonprofit organizations that center the voices of historically oppressed communities. Prior to launching his own venture last year, Preston served as the director of federal advocacy and government affairs at the Trevor Project. He has also dedicated years of service to URGE, Unite for Reproductive and Gender Equity, Advocates for Youth, the Center for Health and Gender Equity, Center for American Progress, and the National Coalition for LGBTQ+ Health. In addition, Preston has been an adjunct professor of law at Georgetown University Law Center, teaching LGBTQ health law and policy, and at American University Washington College of Law, teaching sexuality, gender identity, and the law. Okay. Preston currently serves on the board of directors for Spark Reproductive, Justice Now, and True Colors United, and he was previously on the National Women's Health Network's Policy Advisory Council. For the second year, he is also the president of Alpha Phi Alpha Fraternity, Inc., Omicron Eta Lambda chapter. Most recently, Preston served as the co-chair of Collective Action for Safe Spaces Board of Directors and National Bar Association Young Lawyers Division Social Justice Committee. In the summer of 2021, Preston helped lead a 10-week protest against Nelly's Sports Bar, a popular bar in the nation's capital, after a video revealed a security guard dragging a Black woman down the stairs by her hair. Preston has been featured in Washington Post, BET, MTV, The Root, The Griot, The Atlantic, BuzzFeed, CNN, Fox News, MSNBC, The Guardian, and others. He has earned many accolades, including being named Alpha Phi Alpha Fraternity Inc.'s inaugural 40 Under 40, a Rockwood Fellow for Leaders in Reproductive Health Rights and Justice, and was voted DC LGBTQ's most committed activist by the Washington Blade in 2021. He was named one of the 2020 best LGBTQ lawyers under 40 by the LGBTQ Bar Association. Preston was the first openly LGBTQ chair of the Washington Bar Association Young Lawyers Division and was a featured author in the 2022 book, The Black Agenda, Bold Solutions for a Broken System. He holds an LLM in law and government from American University, Washington College of Law, a Juris Doctorate, cum laude from North Carolina Central University School of Law, and a Bachelor of Arts cum laude in political science from Kent State University. And you can also find Preston on your television screens that you most likely know him from as a cast member on Bravo's reality TV show, Summer House, Martha's Vineyard.
Let's fucking go.
Preston, thank you so much for being on Bad Queers today. We're so excited to have you and for you to take your time out of your busy schedule. I know we're in the midst of season two of Summer House, so I know you are being booked and busy.
Yes. Listen, well, as a bad queer, I'm happy to be here. So thank you for the invitation.
Of course. I was like, and noted, bad queer, yes. Right here. This is what... This is what we have going on here. So can you give us a little bit of background for folks who may not have watched the show or have not gotten to know you yet? Can we get a little high level summary about you?
Absolutely. So, well, Summer House Martha's Vineyard is really a show that follows 10 Black professionals on the vineyard. And for folks who haven't been to the vineyard just yet, it is really close to Massachusetts, right off of the coast of Cape Cod. And what I really love about it, I've been going for close to a decade at this point. What I really love about it is that it really is the place. I mean, it was one of the first places Black folks could own property in the United States. And I think that's a fun fact that people may not know. I will say a little about me. I'm from the Midwest. So I'm from Ohio, have a lot of deep roots in the South, mostly Mississippi and Alabama. But I am a bad queer, if you will, but I'm a Black queer person. Again, raised in Dayton, have a lot of lineage there. Dayton, Ohio, of course, that is. Have a lot of lineage there. And always been somebody who was pretty radical, pretty progressive, or I guess they say far left. Who knows what all this political ideology means at this point. But I've always just kind of known who I am and whose I am. And in some spaces, it makes me incredibly popular. Other spaces, it makes me, oh my God, who is that coming into this room? And I love all of it. I love every single drop of it. On the show, many people have deduced me, or I should say made me, the voice of reason, which is very interesting because I don't know if I am the voice of reason because I am, you know, a lawyer, you know, sometimes we call us a counselor, or if I just like to listen to multiple sides of arguments and positions as a double Pisces who really love tears. But I will say in this show, it's an interesting space in this show being the emotional center and the queer person because I just know many fellow queer folks are used to being the emotional center in their spaces and communities. And as much as I think we are suited to do it, it gets incredibly frustrating at the same time.
Absolutely. I think that was something that was voiced a lot this season. I think you handled it with grace in the first season with being that friend to be able to hold everybody down, to make sure everybody was grounded, to call people in and out. Mm-hmm. Balance, mm-hmm. Honestly. And it was actually beautiful to see representation from you that was just patient, that was kind, that could kind of see a lot of perspectives. But also you gave us the whole spectrum of what it's like to be the one Black queer person in the house, what it's like to be on both the masculine and feminine sides of the spectrum, from hanging out with the boys to going out with the girls. And it was really cool to see. But I was also wondering the whole time, is he tired?
Exhausted.
Ebbing and flowing.
Oh, tired. It's such an understatement in the most like interesting of ways. Because when I tell you, I was exhausted. I mean, people talk about it a lot this season, but they're often like, you know, we saw you kind of break And like, what was the reason for that? And I'm like, y'all, because we is tired. Like, it is tired being everything to everyone, or at least perceived that way. And at some moments, you're going to be like, who the hell is here for me? Right? Like, who's actually going to lift me up if I'm frustrated? Who's going to be the person I can speak to when I'm incredibly upset at something that just happened? Who's going to be the person that calls someone out when I tell you that something is homophobic, even if you don't think it is, because it's so soft like a butter knife? Like, mm-hmm. who's going to be there for me? And I'm just so used to a lot of us not having those people in our communities, particularly straight folks.
Right. And did you find that you did have that support on your end when it came at the end of the day? Because there is a lot of things we don't get to see on camera, but were you able to have support? Because you were support for almost everybody at some point twice over.
I thank you for that. I think, yes, for sure. I think after a while, there were certain people who I could always lean on and have these kind of like, let me lay your head on your bosom type moments, honestly. So a lot of them are like the Jordans on the show, the Summers on the show. Honestly, the Amirs and Nick on the show, like who were really like, I don't understand like everything you're going to share with me, but I love and appreciate you enough to know that what you're sharing is valid and I want to hear you.
We love to see that, because that was always something I was curious about, because it did seem like you had this emotional toll and coming in with so much real raw emotion around family and things, especially this season. I was just like, I want to hug you throughout the show. I wanted to give you that love, but I do also want to thank you for the representation that you gave throughout the show, because I think there's so many stereotypes around Black gay men that are highlighted on reality TV shows, especially, and it's like, we love Bravo, but also on Bravo, it is the sassy, the stereotypical problematic gay friend who is going to come through. And you actually gave what I feel like is the everyday. I'm a professional. I'm going to let my friends know I am settled in myself type person. And I think that's where you have gotten the reputation now, where it's just like, you are the calm within the storm and the waves of tears that happen in the house. And I think it's beautiful to be able to witness that.
I appreciate that, because I believe everyone is multidimensional, but not everyone knows how to express their multidimensionality. And I think for me, I have been in a space where I have been, you know, an attorney now for about 13, 14 years. I've had the career and still obviously have the career. But I think throughout all of that, throughout all of my trials and tribulations, I've had an incredibly difficult life. I don't mince words about that. And I'm grateful that I am here. Not only here physically alive, but like literally is able to just represent so many people. Like, I'm starting with myself, obviously, and I really hope that people see themselves within me. But also at the same time, like, I recognize that there's a lot of stereotypes and caricatures that have been presented for Black queer folks, but especially Black gay men on Bravo. Like, you know, and it's not their fault. They were just being who they were. But I think, like, when you really look at the show, they were really the accessories to their best woman friend. And oftentimes the caricature kind of supplanted them to be very, you know, the stereotype. Right. Like the ones who were just really here to give you a one liner, the ones who were here to be, you know, give you a quip, who are going to shade you, who are going to read you down, who are going to talk about your fashions. And that is also true within our community. So let's be clear. Like, I love them as well. And it's like, how do we actually show that and many other dimensions within the Black queer space? And I don't think we've ever really had that opportunity, certainly not on Bravo. And I think this is that chance, not done perfectly. It never will be. Right. But at least have that chance to see many versions of us.
Absolutely.
I feel like I am coming in between seasons, like how I'm about to ask you this next question. Hi, Preston.
Hi.
For everybody else. Little late to this interview, but going to jump right in to ask, in between seasons, like, what is it like? Like, after you finish filming season one, you've seen it, you viewed it, like, what is like the most important things that you learned about production and just filming in general?
First, of all, I'm looking at this background. It looks like a lecture abundance background. I'm here for it because I love
this session. It is.
So I will say that in between seasons, I think are the roughest moments sometimes. Like it can be the most beautiful moments, but also it can be rough moments. And I say that because you have an opportunity to really know how people feel about certain things, right? And that means your relationships blossom or they collapse. Right. And then sometimes they just kind of been stagnant. And I think for me, I was able to blossom with some friendships on the show, specifically like build really beautiful relationships and friendships and like go on trips together and really kind of talk every day, you know, go to New York, et cetera, like just to really spend time with folks. Other times it was really the opposite. And then, and it was few and far between, thankfully, but there were a couple moments I must admit where I was like, I actually don't know if I really rock with you like that. Right. Like I can film with you, but I'm not going to lie and pretend we are friends because we're not, right? Like we are frenemies at best. And I think that sometimes maybe that means good things for the show, but I share this with folks. I am a year and a half from 40. And I don't really have time to lie about whether I like somebody or not. Like, I hope I learned it at 25, but I didn't. But it's like, at this point in my life, I don't have time to lie about whether I like you. So, you know, it doesn't mean I hate you. It doesn't mean I don't ever want to see you again. But also, like, let's be real, we're not there all the way. And I think sometimes off season taught me that. And it also makes you feel differently around, like, what your role is. Keeping it a buck, last season, I don't think I really understood my role. I think viewers understood my role more than I did. I was working at the Trevor Project. God bless that organization and the people who still work there. But I was working at the Trevor Project and I was busy all the time when we were actually filming.
Yeah, you stayed on your laptop. That's for sure.
And that was reality TV. Like I was actually working. And so I think in many instances, I was like, I can't really engage in these moments because I'm actually working. And I think in many instances, when you saw me engage, all I could do was be as intentional as I could because I was just drained. I was drained from actually working. And I was like, y'all gonna get what y'all gonna get. I appreciate that they still trusted to cast me, knowing that I would still have to do that. So they clearly saw something in me, right, to still know that I would have to do that. But I tell you this, like this, when I became an entrepreneur from our first break after that, and it just became beautiful to be able to have a little bit more control over my schedule and to be able to figure out how to engage and also be really real about how I was feeling in certain moments and be more vocal about those moments.
How's your relationship with the production team and producers? One of the things I love about the show is that y'all seem to have a really good relationship with the producers. Mm-hmm. I like when they like break the fourth wall or talk directly to y'all and they capture that. Like, how's that relationship?
I love our producers. I really do. Right. We're never going to agree on everything. We never will. And in fact, the second it happens, there needs to be a different cast or production company. Like it just never. Right. There needs to be trust always. There needs to be relational moments. But I will say that I truly feel a lot of our producers have our back and maybe it's because a lot of them are Black. Right. A lot of them.
Yeah.
And I know there were moments that were shot that probably aren't going to make air because I'm not going to say they were so bad, but I think they were like, we have to actually treat y'all like humans. And we can't have these moments that are very like snippets of what actually is life become like the everyday message, the fodder that is going to be consistent on social media. Yeah. I don't think that's true with certain producers. Like, it's just
really isn't.
Yeah. On the flip side, they not my friends. Right. And I am very clear that they have a job to do. And I respect and honor that job. I think there's an ethics attached to it. I think for me personally, I think there's an ethics attached to it. But I, as much as I respect and love them, I never confuse it with friendship. And I really do hope that anyone entering into the reality TV space can respect the difference, right? Can respect the nuance that their job is to be close with you. Their job is to elucidate and elicit certain responses. And it's up to you to determine what that level of relationship can be. But at the end of the day, their job is to make an entertaining show. That is their job.
Mm-hmm. I was like, the listeners and
not
the
viewers, your little friends.
All, right. Not, that not one of your little friends. Yeah.
Like, not one of your little friends. Them your work friends. Right. Right.
But speaking of some of your friends on the show. Yeah. So we know that you grew up well, in college, that you were part of Greek Life, and that's how you and Silas met. Mm-hmm. I have to say, as watching it, I was just like, wow, how did he luck out with you as a friend? Because he seems like the most stereotypical man, especially once you add the military layer on there and coming to you as you are. But were you out in college? Were you out in your fraternity? Did you all develop a relationship as you came onto the show? And then how did you feel about his behavior throughout the show?
So I love this question. I must correct a couple things here. And I hope this is actually a teaching moment for listeners too. So Silas and I actually crossed alumni chapter. Okay. So both of us had already had our bachelor's degrees at least. We crossed in spring of 2018. So by the time we crossed, I was already fully quote unquote into my career. I had already had 3 degrees. Silas at that point had already had a degree, maybe 2 at that point, actually. But still, I think this is an important question because, you know, when I was in college, I'll take it as 2 parts. When I was in college, I wasn't really out. Like, I don't think I became what I would consider out until like my senior year in college. Until I was like, nobody in my family paying my bills. I'm good. Like, this rejection, if happens, will be okay because y'all can't help me anyway. So
yeah. It's almost like, I wish y'all would say something.
I'm still gonna suck a little dick. So
that's the number one advice that we give is like, are they paying your bills? No, exactly. You are free to be. Okay?
Are you safe? All right.
Are you safe? You listen, will you need them tomorrow? Like that. Yeah. So let's figure this out. So I wasn't really out until like my senior year, which was a very fascinating experience anyway, because you know, looking back, people knew probably, or at least had their suspicions, but you know, it's not really up to them. It's up to me and my comfort level. I think the Divine Nine is a very interesting space that I will always love forever and ever. In fact, the reason why I'm in Philly is because we have our regional convention for my fraternity and I'm still very active. I'm a chapter president, actually. I think it's still fascinating though, because the reality is there is still rampant homophobia throughout the Divine Nine. I think anyone who's actually even shocked at that statement, Greek or not Greek, I'm a little worried, right? Like, I think we all know, right, that any organization, you know, unless you're explicitly queer, quite frankly, unfortunately, is a microcosm of society. Society writ large is homophobic and transphobic. And so it makes its way into these organizations. And my fraternity is no different. I think at the same time, it's just fascinating because when I became an alpha, I was very openly gay, right? Like, certainly I was openly gay, you know, when I was in my senior year in college. And so when I started to like really declare interest and become more interested in the organization, like I was out. And I think even for me, it was a level of discomfort because I'm like, I'm not shifting or going back in the closet for any human being or for any organization. So y'all will have to take this fully. And, you know, they did, right? I'm chapter president. And so everyone doesn't have that experience, right? Just to be very clear. Most people, I would argue, don't have that experience. I know many people who have these examples where they go back into the closet, you know, and I'm using this as very, right? We know this is very like proverbial language. Like, you know, they go back into the closet because they want to achieve this dream. And it's a healthy tension that I get, right? I don't necessarily agree with, but I get. And so when it comes to Silas has always been interesting to me because I always believe Silas means well. I know that's a shock probably for most folks, but I really do believe nothing he stated was malicious ever. Like I think some of it was just upbringing. I, you know, there's a lot of nuance to that. And I believe at the end of the day, he would always have my back. Right.
Yeah.
I just think it sucks when it's all these layers of like, machismo, masculinity, toxicity, things that you learn as men, right? Things I had to unpack, right? Because I was also reared as a straight man, right? So like, you know, that, you know, there is a protector that has to be created and it has to be you. Your partner is supposed to cook and clean for you. You are supposed to be the breadwinner. Like all of that is stuff for everybody to unpack, but if you're reared as male. And so like, I in many ways gave him grace, but I was still frustrated by it. And I think I'm more frustrated by it because I just am a grown ass adult who spent the time and the money on therapy services to actually unpack all of this. And so I think when you see someone who is not doing the work or someone who don't even know that it's negative enough to do the work, it becomes frustrating. And I think that is like the totality of my experiences, even small things, right? Like I will never forget a moment in season one when Silas and Jason were moving a table and it became like this instructional guide on how to move a table as opposed to just picking up the table and moving. Like it became like step one, do this. Why are you not bending the table this way? And I'm just like, the fact that I know women will not be having this argument right now is the thing that like blows me away, right? This is a very mask of center conversation. And I think that is what, like when I check out in certain moments, I'm like, and y'all don't even know that this is stupid. Like, right. So stuff like that, where I'm just like, oh, I love him dearly and I always will. And I just really, you know, and I see him shifting and changing and learning and adapting. And I just pray that that continues because it doesn't for many people.
Yeah. One of the things that's great about watching all of y'all are that you do hold each other accountable. Like y'all have different, difficult conversations. And you also give each other space to kind of figure it out or, you know, have grace and grow. Mm-hmm. This particular season, I just finished episode 5 of season 2. So the episode I watched, you had a conversation with Phil, who had a brief but very problematic appearance on season 1. And you gave him the space to explain his words and apologize for that night. When do you personally know when you feel like it's okay to offer someone grace and give them the opportunity to explain themselves and apologize? And I know it's situational, but right. Again, I think it's so valuable, like seeing that on TV, especially in our community.
I am going to try to shorten this up. I can be long-winded, but it's because it's important. Phil was such an interesting person to me. I mean, I know interesting means a lot and nothing at the same time, but like he was someone who reminded me of a lot of folks in my childhood, from cousins to uncle, you name it. And I just was like, I know all of this is not your fault. Like, it's just like, I know.
I know how you got here.
I get it. Like, I see it. And I think for me, this was a lot actually for me in this moment. And it was really uncomfortable to watch back, particularly the episode where I was crying because, you know, I know what it's like to be the only in a room and I hate it. I think, unfortunately, I think there are some queer people who like being the only in a room.
But that's a whole other conversation.
I ain't one of them and I ain't gonna ever be one of them. And I was like, oh my God, like, you know, I know it already feels like I'm tripping. Like I know from some of y'all, it feels like I'm tripping, but it hurts. Like it actually is a triggered response. And, you know, so I had to sit with it for a little bit. And then when it came to me, when I was finally able to express, like, this is what it is, and this is how I feel, some of y'all may not get it. If you get it, you get it. And, you know, so it came to me like, hey, he wants to talk to you. What I really appreciated about the he wants to talk to you is it did not feel, I don't know what's in someone's head and heart. Personally, it did not feel it was just because we were filming. It actually felt like he has the wrong perception of me based on how I acted, and I want to talk to him about that. And so, because if it wasn't that, like if I didn't even get a sense of, like, if I got a sense of like, this is for TV, this is because we're filming, or like this is because like he tripping, but I just want to clear the air, But it didn't give me any of that. Like, there was no pushback when me and Phil started talking. Like, he immediately apologized. And so I think for me, I always have to just get a feel for, like, what the situation actually is. Grace is so important to me. I mean, I've been doing community advocacy, activism, and engagement work for a couple of decades now. And I think, listen, everyone, I'm going to be real. My opinion, everyone does not deserve grace. Right. My grace, at least from somebody, they probably do. From me, everyone does not deserve my grace. And I've realized that. But there are so many moments where I'm like, I just love Black folks so much that it becomes incredibly uncomfortable when I see tenets of white supremacy popping up in Black people and that I can't even like hear you out. Like, it's like I understand white supremacy. I understand homophobia. I understand all this stuff. And if I can't even be willing to hear out someone who is like being willing to talk to me about how they have messed up, I don't know what I'm engaging a community for, you know? Yeah. And I think that is what grace means to me. It's like, first I need to just sense out why this is happening. And then I need to sometimes check myself, right? Because some moments it's like, whatever, I'm not trying to hear that. And I'm okay with that. Like, I'm okay with it. But with him in particular, I don't think my opinion is fully shifted on him, but I certainly in that moment, it just felt like I needed to have the conversation. And I really wish I could identify the moment, the feeling, the gut reaction, but there was just something in me that was like, you got to talk about this. It just makes sense to talk about this with him. And because I've only had one interaction with him. And yeah. I'm like, there has to be a level here that's not just us getting fucked up. Like, there's something else here, I imagine, that is different than just let's turn up and drink all the time, right? And I'm a fan of drinking. Don't get me wrong. I love to turn up. But, like, there's just something else that has to be a level here.
Absolutely.
It's important the way he approached that, too, that he wanted to talk to you. There's, like, I know there's a lot of things that have to, like, fall into place for it to feel comfortable enough to do that. So thank you for that.
Of course.
And I know that the people in your life have to be real ones, because the way that you hold folks accountable, you can read them for filth and hold them right in your bosom as well. It's a beautiful balance. So for you personally, how did you build your community?
Oh my God. Community. I have to say this. Community means the world to me. Like, my friends, my chosen family, they just mean quite literally the world to me. And I don't know what I would do without them. And I think for me, I saw such a great tweet the other day. And I'm not going to get all the words correct, but it was someone who tweeted something to the effect of, if you're over 30 years old, there's no excuses. You need to hire movers. Your friends are not obligated to help you move. Mm-hmm. And someone quote tweeted it and was like, see, this is where it gets tricky, because this is also community, right? Like, community is not just the fun stuff. It is not just the happy hours, the brunches. Community is also the non-fun stuff, right? Like, picking up your friend if they get stranded, right? If there's a flat tire, are you or someone else going to be able to help them exchange it or find a service for it, right? Like, are you going to... Like, there's so many dynamics to what non-fun community membership looks like that I think we get confused and think it's just the fun parts. And so for me, as I was really building my community, I always just thought about, like, who is it in my space, in my chosen family, in my biological family that I genuinely want to build space with, because I know they'll be there for me to turn up and to cry, right? Like, and that is so important to me. Yes, I believe you have different friends for different purposes. I don't want them anymore. I want my friends to be able to be all the things to each other that we need. And so, yeah, that may change over time, right? Because people are introverts or ambiverts or extroverts, right? There's different financial resources, et cetera. But I want all of my friends and community to have a level of emotional intelligence. And that's important to me, right? It doesn't mean that because some of my friends don't drink, right? So I'm also not going to press you to drink if you don't drink. Or some of my friends don't smoke. So I'm also not going to press you to smoke if you don't smoke, right? There's different levels for friendships, for different things. But I just need people who are there for me in the good times and the not so good times, right? Because that is how I show up for my community as well.
I love that. You see me at the beginning, I'm like, opt me out of moving, but I'll be there for everything else.
And I said that
the
too.
Bad back rent.
Because you know what? When I saw that tweet, I said, well, listen, let me be clear. I ain't going to help you move either, but I will absolutely help you pay for a mover if you actually would want
to. I was about to say that. Like, I would chip in to get you a mover, but me?
I'm the friend who will help you unpack. I'm like, I'll show up and help you unpack.
You know what? That's good. That's actually good. Because I actually like unpacking and I like organizing. So
that's good. Yeah. It's helpful. It's helpful. So Pride season is coming up. How do you usually celebrate Pride? Like, what's your favorite Pride moment or event that you've been to?
The reason I love it so much is because to me, I love DC Black Pride. Like, oh my God. So I'm actually already hosting a couple of events on the calendar.
Okay. Well,
DC Black Pride Memorial Day weekend. Folks, a lot of people don't know Black Pride in the United States started in DC. And you know, people keep trying to reclaim, but listen, thank God for our historians who've made it known. it is DC. And that is really the thing that gives me so much joy. Whenever people text me, are you in DC for Memorial Day weekend? I was like, it's Black Pride. Of course I'm in DC for Memorial Day weekend.
It's so great.
My favorite, and I can't remember the exact year. It probably was like 2015, but it was 2015 or 2016 for sure. But it was my favorite Black Pride moment. And I was just talking to my friend. It was three friends in particular who I hung out with for 4 days in a row. My friend Carlos, Wayne, and Steven. And funny enough, we had just met each other like a couple of months before that. And we like our friendship bond just connected. And we have these like pictures that I always go back on Facebook because we looked a mess. Like I looked a mess. They looked cute. I was making these pictures. I said, baby, I didn't know what fashion was then, but I had a ball. And it was such a great time. That is always what I look forward to. There is something that is so incredibly important about Black spaces, about Black queer spaces, and really about Black pride. Like I've written articles on this in the past around like Black pride is for Black people. And what I really mean, but what I ultimately mean by that is like, it is just a space where Black connection is important, where queer connection is important. And I just always love it. Like there's nothing more beautiful to me than Black Pride.
Yeah. Especially DC Black Pride. Mm-hmm. The best.
It's different.
Yeah.
It hits different. On top of Pride season, you also have more celebrations coming to you because you recently got engaged. Congratulations, first of all.
Thank you.
Also, you did that with the ring choice, and I'm going to need you to help me whenever I make that decision. Please and thank you.
Oh my gosh, I'm so grateful for that. Listen, I hate to be one of those bougie folks, but maybe I don't. But I love David Yurman, honestly, and I have the most amazing jeweler there, Maurice. He's always so helpful, and at this point, like yes, I'm sure there's something he gets from it, but it's so special the way he actually talks to me and my partner's been going to him for a while too, but he really cares about making sure something fits right, fits the skin tone, like really gets you like what you can afford. And I really appreciate him.
It's awesome. Shout out to David Yurman.
Yes. And y'all hear that. So listen, make sure to give me some sponsorships, Yurman.
Okay. Exactly.
Okay, this was an opportunity. That was missed. Okay. So let's run it back.
I'm speaking into existence.
I do have to shout them out because even for our premiere party, they were my sponsor. And so they honestly gifted me some jewelry. Like they really have been supportive in this journey, honestly.
That's awesome.
We love to see that. Cool. Let's take it back to the wonderful day that you all connected on Jacked.
Yes.
Because first of all, anytime we do have gay men on the podcast, I'm just like, look, Grindr, Jack, those areas are just mysteries to us. And we just need to know what that experience was like and how did you actually turn it into not just a booty call, but a lifelong partner?
You know, it's interesting. I have found many good friends from apps, like genuine non-sexual friends. Well, I think friends can be sexual and genuine, but nonetheless, I have found some very good, genuine like friends from Jack, from Grindr, from, taking it back, like Adam for Adam, Black Gay Chat.
Ooh,
like,
come on, Adam for Adam.
Like I have really, and sometimes I think it's about how you approach with individual people. Like the same people I've made booty calls on Jack, right? I've made other friendships there, right? I think for me personally, I have had But it's interesting. He slid in my DMs. And, you know, sometimes, you know, you go back to the profile. You're like, oh, you know, let me check this out. And I will say, like, not only did I love his pictures, of course, but I really love just the vibe I was getting from the profile. It kind of gave me, like, you know, I'm a lawyer, but I love to go out and have a good time. I'm very smart, but don't try me. And, like, I really love all of it. And, you know, it made me respond, of course. And then, you know, we're talking on Jack for like 2 weeks, like every day for 2 weeks. And we're like, why don't we exchange numbers? And when we exchanged numbers, we made a plan to go out to eat. And we went to this place in DC called Denson Liquor Bar. And that was kind of it. They have these amazing grilled cheese sandwiches. So, excuse me, we had grilled cheese, some soup, some drinks and drinks and drinks. And I think it was just our consistency that really allowed us to just stay connected. You know, we started dating before COVID happened, like before we knew about COVID, but we certainly were in the height of COVID when our relationship was really picking off, or at least us dating. Mm. And I think what really helped our continuity, honestly, was that we took a break during COVID.
Okay.
We had a very honest conversation about it. I mean, our first date, we started talking in December 2019. Our first date was in January 2020. And my birthday, my 35th birthday, was in March of 2020. And then, you know, I went to Cabo with some friends and he texted me like, babe, I don't know if you know, but the borders are about to close. Like, so you may want to figure this trip out.
Not him being the lifesaver.
He lifesaved.
Cabo your way back over the border.
Okay.
Listen. He came to the airport, picked me up from DCA. And, you know, honestly, I stayed at his apartment for like 2.5 weeks. And I think that that kind of was like lovely and set off some panic from both of us. You know, this is back in the day, we were washing our grocery bags. Like, not just our
grocery
bags. But wiping down our grocery bags.
Mm-hmm. So, what a time.
So we had no clue what was going on. But we took a break early summer because it was just like, we don't know what's happening with COVID. We don't really, like, yes, we find each other attractive and we genuinely have feelings for each other, but we can't date anyone else. Like, it doesn't, like, there's actually, it's unfair to both of us because we actually can't even explore anything else with other people to see if this is genuine enough to close off the doors with dating other people. And, you know, we took maybe like 2 months apart. And I kid you not, I blame him and I joke about this, but I got COVID during those months apart. And I was like, you see what happens? You left me in the street. And I went out and had a good time when the bar started to reopen. But honestly, we connected again and we haven't stopped dating ever since, you know?
Oh,
yeah.
That's awesome. That's interesting too, to have it develop during COVID, because it obviously such uncertain times, but very smart to take that break to be like, okay, this isn't even real, or it's real what's going on, but this isn't like true to, you know, the normal quote unquote dating, you know, times. So that's cool.
I love Donald because one of the things we can always talk. And I think, right, like, because I think we know we both mean well when we talk to each other. And so we always want to obviously use our language and make sure that we're communicating effectively, but even if there's like an ouch oops moment, it's never rooted in malice, right? And so we're like, okay, we need to talk about this. So when we had this conversation, he brought it to me. He was just like, I don't know what this is and how we can continue with what this world is. And I knew some of it, a lot of it was fear. I knew a lot of it was like, I like him and I don't know how to like somebody in a pandemic. Right. Let alone like without a pandemic, I don't know how to like people. So I'm like, right. What? How do you do with them? What? But, you know, I don't know. Maybe. Right. Maybe divine timing would have still worked it out. But I don't know if we would have been where we are. I don't know if we would be where we are now if we did not take that break, honestly.
Fair.
Yeah, that's a beautiful awareness.
Congrats to y'all.
Thank you.
It's amazing.
You love to see it. All right. Chris, anything else before we head off to our bad queer opinions? I was like, we ended on such a beautiful note. I just want to be sure before we get into pettiness, you know?
Let's go back to drama.
Could, but I was like, no, look, over to respect your time. And yeah, no, we could get right into bad queer opinions.
All right. Well, what type of bad queers will we be if we didn't have unpopular queer opinions? So Preston, welcome to this section of the show. Chris and I will go first for examples. We always let our people know that, you know, the space is safe until it's not. And that's where we operate. So we're going to have a good time in this section. I will go ahead and go first. So my bad queer opinion this week when we're recording, it is Lesbian Visibility Week. So, you know, we love to celebrate all those who identify as lesbian. But I just want to give a reminder to the people, a PSA, if you would, that lesbian is not a bad word. We can keep it. The only reason we feel like it's a bad word is because white lesbians have basically ruined it. And I'm going to say it. They have ruined the aesthetic. We used to be real proud lesbians. And then lesbians became a very specific type. Like when you think of lesbian, my first description is somebody with a backwards hat. They're probably wearing muscle tees. They got a little tattoo. They're either walking around with a skateboard or a bike. You know, these are very specific things. And I'm going to blame the white lesbians for ruining the aesthetic for us. But remind everybody else that lesbian is not a bad word, is not a slur, and we can use it. Loud and proud. So, you know who to blame.
Okay. It certainly messed up the vibes and everything. It's like to look at it like that is a very, very specific aesthetic. Please don't blanket that over all of us. Mm-hmm. Thanks. Mm-hmm. Thanks in advance.
Preston, are you the type that could you or could you not have survived your first years of life without a lesbian in your life?
Any gay man saying they could is lying.
Thank you.
Absolutely not.
Here we go.
No, women generally, but especially lesbian women, were my mentors and the folks who really like housed me, fed me, got me like to class, like truly. Yes. So there's no way as a baby gay and as a fully grown, thick adult gay now, there's no way, no way I would have been okay without lesbians. Oh my God.
Yeah. A PSA, folks. PSA. Thank you so much.
I love it. I have a bad queer question for y'all. So this is just want to know. Should we have a character count for queer acronyms? Like five letters being the sweet spot, like the max. And this isn't aimed at like discouraging us from continuing to self-identify and expand language. But should there be a character count like on acronyms? Like, you know, the ones that come to mind is like obviously LGBTQIA plus LGBTQQIP2SA, all great. But I wonder if we should have a character count. Like, should we? How would that work? And should we have it?
I feel like we should.
I just, you know, maybe six to make it even, you know, six letters. Mm-hmm. It's a character count.
I love the way you posed your statement as a question, though.
Like, you clock it. Block it. Thank you so much.
Hedging my bet. Should it? I don't know.
He said, I'm going to let y'all take my burdens away.
It's a question.
Thank you so much.
I love it. Question. It reminds me of one of my favorite captions sometimes, my thoughts. Feedback. You
know when I know. You know damn well. I know. Yeah. When I thought of it, I was like, maybe if I turn it a little bit this way, mm-hmm. You're gonna open it up for the audience. No, and everything. But
I can see, you know what? I be hating sometimes and I'm like, dang, I be agreeing with some of these straight folks. I do think it's a lot sometimes.
It is a lot of letters.
Like the plus is gonna have to be the catch all after a while.
I just think the plus is great. The plus is on every streaming app. It just makes sense. It's a part of our lives. Like pluses are I think it's great. And again, I don't want us to, I'm not that gay that's like, another word. Like, I love that we're creating new words, but I just think with the acronyms, I'm like, let's cut it down. Let's keep it to six. Mm-hmm. Five or six.
Yeah.
And yes, you know what? Preston, you're right. That's where I stand with that. I think it needs to be five or six. Look at me being like, so y'all agree. So, yep. It's actually not a question anymore. Cool.
You said accountability. is what we're giving right now. Because I feel like having
such a lawyer,
the five or six is like respecting your elders of the community. Yeah. That's the ones that are listed first. And then we go off into the new ones. And so it's like, you know, those have been around for a while. We're respecting the elders, but we know that there's way more out there that helps to identify people, and it's beautiful. But yeah, you did just get lawyered. I just need you to know that.
The queer grandfather clause.
The queer grandfather clause, exactly. There's a lot of things that are just like grandfathered in that are just like, let them be. A lot of things, especially with the older generation, where I'm like, let them go. Let them have that. You know, it's not a help hurt or nobody. Cool. Glad we're on the same page. Thanks, y'all.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know if this is a bad queer opinion, but it's certainly mine. And I say it's a bad queer opinion just because I've just seen some pushback. So I believe every queer person, actually, I believe everyone, but I believe every queer person needs to explore non-monogamy. Like, absolutely, 100% has to explore non-monogamy. And I can really get into the ins and outs of, like...
Please do.
Obviously why I believe people explore just monogamy. And they're like, oh no, it's because we love. No, it's because your parents were in it and they probably should have divorced years ago too. So at the end of the day, I think every single person has to explore non-monogamy. Like, I am so grateful that I realized that I was non-monogamous years ago. I'm grateful for a partner who is fully receptive of it and has really trusted and respects me and our communication about it. And I realized I was just really bad. I thought I was bad at relationships. I was like, this is, you know, bad. I'm like, I'm actually struggling to not cheat, actually. Like, this is bad. And I'm just like, no, I just don't want to just be with you, actually. And I want to be able to explore. And that is okay. It's healthy. It is fully okay. And I really want us to be able to like relinquish some of the trauma that these straight folks in society have placed onto us and be able to be expansive and open ourselves up enough to be like, you know what? I love multiple things simultaneously, including at the same time, for real, for real. And that's okay. That's okay. We're going to all be good. So that is my bad queer opinion.
I love this.
I love it. That was a good answer. Good answer.
Okay.
I like it. Good answer.
I'm just a jealous person. And I'm like, okay, that sounds like it's other therapy services that needs to happen.
But
you're going to be jealous if you're in a monogamous relationship too. That's like...
The way that people forget that you can be jealous still in non-monogamous relationship blows my mind. Away. All of your feelings disappear. Come on. Literally that.
They swear. I like it. Good shot. I like it. I'm with it.
Can I please come back, y'all? Look.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, we got you.
I don't think I've ever laughed so much on a podcast, and I really appreciate you.
Listen, we were excited. We were so excited to have you on it. Again, I am so sorry I'm late, but this has been amazing. And I'm glad we recorded you saying you're coming back because we need you to come back on.
That is your contract. That's how it works, right? And lawyer talk. Yeah. Like, you said it.
Offer acceptance consideration.
Thank you so much. We've been doing this to all of our guests, but since you prompted it, we know that we have been doing it right by having everybody just agree and having the clips. So thank you so much. This has been so fun. I can't believe we're already wrapping up, but you know, we would never leave you without giving shout outs to our faves. My shout out this week is to one of our longtime listeners, Frederick Smith, for their new book, which is coming out in June. It's called One and Done. It is a Black queer higher ed Bay Area romance novel. So Frederick,
thanks.
We're making sure that everybody pre-orders this book. We're going to get you some sales, my guy. Thank you so much for being a longtime listener. And you can follow and support at fsmith827 on IG.
Shout out to Frederick and congrats. My shout out is to Autumn Breon, who is a multidisciplinary artist that investigates the visual vocabulary of liberation through a queer Black feminist lens. Her latest project, The Care Machine, is a vending machine for free reproductive healthcare products. You could check out Autumn's other installations that are really cool. She has this like protective style installation that's cool. on her website at autumnbrion.com or follow her on IG at autumnbrion. And we'll have that in the description.
This is wild because I know both of them. So that is wild.
There we go. Come on, network.
Autumn and I used to be a part of Black Youth Project 100. So it is wild. Oh my gosh. Awesome. My shout out, you know what? Because I tweeted about this and I think Bravo folks are always afraid to just speak certain truths to power. So my shout out is always going to be with Palestine and Palestinian folks. And that's just always really important to me to discuss just how much the connection of Black and Palestinian liberation is and will always be. So that will always be my shout out, Ceasefire Now. So thank y'all so much for leaving this space to even say that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then for everybody to continue to follow all of these future tweets and things that you say, where can they follow and support you?
So because I'm not that creative, it's always going to be Preston Mitchum or Preston.Mitchum everywhere. That's Facebook, TikTok, Instagram, Twitter. I am always available and you will see a lot of tweets and I'm sorry in advance.
It's a great follow.
Yes, truly that. Preston.
Oh, Preston, this has been so fun. My goodness. Like, we're cousins already. Okay. And we're friends.
thank you
so much for taking the time to chat with us. I'm excited to see what the rest of the season has entail and just to see everything upcoming for you. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll be on your socials and watching you. So
absolutely. Thank you. Before we go, for the rest of the season, if you could describe three emotions that we might feel for the rest of the season. I don't know how much you're aware of or what, but what three emotions might we be experiencing for the rest of the season?
So, you know what? I'm not aware of what makes it ultimately, but I know what happens for real. So like what I can share with what happens, let me see, three emotions. Frustration. that will probably continue in many instances. Joy, because there are some really beautiful and joyful moments. And an excitement. I think that's similar to joy there, but I think there are like a lot of things to really be excited about at the end of the season too.
Okay. We love to see it. Well, y'all, if you are not watching Summer House Martha's Vineyard, it is on Peacock. You all need to go and catch up. Season one is out. We are halfway through season two. Be sure to support Preston and all that he does. And thank you again for being on. And for everyone else who is tuned in, we appreciate you. Thank you. And we will see you next week.
Take care.
Shout out to Sienna Liggins for our Bad Queer soundtrack titled Me Again and our sound engineer Cesar for making us sound like we know what we're doing. If you enjoyed the episode, please take the time to leave us a review wherever you listen to podcasts. Until next time.
It's me again. Can we talk about things? I'm so sorry that I'm coming.